Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are joined by Kristen Nichols, editor of the Hemp Business Daily, and Bart Shanum, reporter on cultivation and extraction for Marijuana Business Daily. And we are speaking about the impact of coronavirus on the hemp and marijuana supply chain. Kristen and Bart, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
I'm pretty here. Thanks.
Guys, tell us a little bit about how your day-to-day here has been affected in Denver, Colorado, in the wake of this pandemic.
Kristen, you go first.
Okay. Well, we're trying to cover a plane crash as the plane is going down. I know you guys can relate. This story changes by the hour. Our industry is, of course, very affected. We write for growers, we write for processors, we write for retailers. We know that we have a lot of people that read who are that need the products, use marijuana or hemp products, and just kind of want to know, is the supply chain safe? Can I get my medicine or what I'm using? And how is my day-to-day life affected? Do I still have a job? Do I still have a market? We're trying to keep up with those developments just like everybody. It changes every 5 minutes. It's a scary time for a lot of folks, and our job is to try to get the best information to folks as soon as we can without being unnecessarily, scaring folks, but also really putting some clear numbers and some pure analysis behind what's going on right now.
Yeah, right. We're covering every aspect of this, and obviously it's touching every single sector in the industry, and we're just kind of watching how it all plays out. Kristen said, it's changing every 5 minutes.
Guys, thank you for joining us. This is Bob. You talk about the best information and sort of the job as a journalist overall. How do you evaluate information? What is the process? Not generally speaking, although it might bear on that, but as it relates specifically to the coronavirus, when it's so difficult to get seemingly accurate information, and that's not a comment on leadership or distribution of information, it's just that everything's happening so quickly, you don't know what's real and what's not, compounded by the fact that social media puts things out and sort of runs with a notion or a story before it's ever been validated. What are your checkboxes, if you will, to sort of gather information and make sure that what you're doing is as accurate as possible?
Well, if I could start, I just want to say this crisis really underscores the value of being a legal product and a regulated product versus being something the federal government considers illegal. If you're in the hemp supply chain, they're hearing from the USDA, they're hearing from the FDA about inspections, about where things are going. If you're a marijuana operator, you really have to look to your state health department, your counties. And like you said, it's really hard to vet information that shows, I think, really the challenge that a lot of marijuana operators have working in a product that the federal government, which is in charge of emergency response, generally like this, doesn't really consider an industry worth thinking about.
Well, and Bob, too, this is a rapidly changing story and it's moving really quickly. But we're also not in the, need to post a update every 5 minutes game as a B2B publication. So we can kind of take our time and, look for data sources, look for, verifiable information, do some really thorough in-depth reporting and provide our own kind of analysis on things. And that allows us to, I think, write as credible and as verifiable information as we can get.
That's a great perspective and much appreciated. And Kristen, I want to follow up on that distinction, and that's precisely why we have you both on the phone, and it's the idea of this legal distinction between the hemp industry and the marijuana industry, if you will, and the fact that, yes, when you have the USDA involved and departments of ag around the country and around the world communicating with an industry that, while it might not be the most warmly embraced, although we're seeing that change, it is treated like an actual component of an industry, component of an ag sector globally. Whereas, to your point, marijuana is sort of the stepchild that nobody wants to talk about or acknowledge that exists. And as we see these government subsidies perhaps come out and these relief packages come out, what are your thoughts about how those might be available to different sectors of our industry because of the legality and the treatment? Certainly the hemp actors would be in a position to claim that they're acting lawfully across the board and maybe are directly in the pipeline of government benefits. But these folks on the marijuana side of the industry who've worked so hard and built out the same kind of infrastructure at an enormous cost, they might be left to the side. Is that something that you've contemplated or thought about?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're definitely going to watch as that all plays out. I mean, what options these business owners have on the marijuana side for, you know, applying for subsidies or for any kind of federal assistance. I mean, that's going to be kind of an open question. I don't think that we're really going to know, you know, what relief is going to be available to them because of all of these, you know, legal challenges.
And only time will tell.
And I just want to add a small example. Yeah, I just want to add a small example from Colorado that kind of shows that yesterday in Colorado, the governor here released some more money for SBA loans. This is the Small Business Administration. Hemp producers are eligible for those. You can apply and say, my buyer backed out. I need $10,000 to fill this contract or something. That is not an option for marijuana producers right now. So they really are, I think, really vulnerable in this crisis.
Very well said. And you know, as we look at this and how it does impact the supply chain, let's try to do our best to define this cannabis supply chain. So when you talk about the marijuana supply chain, if you will, certainly in the United States, it's intrastate. In other words, that the cultivation, the distribution is performed within a state and within that state only as it relates to actual product, whether that's flower or a derivative from the marijuana plant. Whereas then globally, the marijuana supply chain, if you look at where things are moving, you've got activity coming from Canada into the European Union. You've got activity and movement of product, oils mostly, from places like Uruguay and increasingly some other Latin American countries that will supply medical cannabis or increasingly adult use cannabis markets around the world. But it's very, very narrow, and it's limited to flower. And direct THC oils or extracts. Whereas when you look at the hemp side of the industry, the supply chain's much much broader. It's all encompassing because you're looking at one plant that is utilized for food, fiber, fuel, so forth and so on. So, Krista, maybe you could comment on how you see this coronavirus interrupting all of this great progress, frankly, the establishment of a cannabis supply chain that's global in scope. How do you see this impacting trade?
It's going to be huge. It's going to be right away. As we know, right now, everybody that's planning to grow hemp outside, at least, is getting ready to plant, getting ready to think about what they're going to put in the ground. And you know better than me, Bob, from what you're seeing from your clients, but because the U.S. is late to the hemp game, we have a lack of good cultivars and genetics that are from here. A lot of folks are relying on suppliers in more established hemp markets that have stable genetics. And that all that activity is on hold. You also pointed out things like textiles and kind of non-woven products. Those are completely on hold. The opportunity, of course, down the road is that this makes people take a second look maybe at more expensive and more earlier stage companies that are making these products in the U.S. and would like to compete with older, more established producers in other countries. I don't want to say there's any silver lining to being this serious, But that's where I think that it could shake out. For right now, if you are doing any kind of business with anything, whether it's a seed product, a fiber product, or, you know, a flower CBD product, you are really disrupted because you're really relying in this new industry on overseas. And I think where this spills over, and I want to get Bart's take on this too, even though you think of the marijuana industry being state by state, we're receive the sale, we might be a little insulated from the global supply chain. Of course, folks that make, you know, whether it's the packaging you use, whether the machinery you're using, all kinds of supplies rely on producers from out of the places. So even if you are a marijuana company, I'm in state X, I only grow here and sell here, you still probably have parts of your business that are going to be affected by the disruptions of the global supply chain.
Yeah, completely. Like, we've seen bait companies that have worried about being able to source hardware, almost all of the technology that produces vape hardware, that's all in, you know, one particular region in China. Especially when the outbreak occurred, I think there was a lot of concern over whether or not the factories were going to continue to run. It does seem like some of that production capability is kind of ramped back up a little bit, but it's still going to slow things down quite a bit. And, you know, luckily a lot of these vape companies have kind of stockpiled, or just when they order in bulk. So they'll have some supply for now, but, you know, who knows what's going to happen here in the next month or two.
Well, in many ways, Bart, the marijuana supply chain is more narrow, but in a variety of ways, many ways, it's also far more complex than the hemp side of the supply chain. So looking at that interruption, as you point out, looking at the fact that, you know, at least on the coasts, cannabis, marijuana-related businesses have been deemed an essential business for a variety of reasons. And we see that notion sort of taking hold in a variety of places around the world, not just across the United States. Do you think that whether they're medical marijuana patients or simply adults over the appropriate age that want to go out and purchase cannabis, whether it's a health and wellness or a vice purchase, is sort of irrelevant at this stage. Do you think that the supply will keep up with the demand on the marijuana side of the industry, given what we're seeing in these shutdowns, curfews, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, just last week, we had a story on the site that said that in Colorado, California, and Washington State, that we've seen a spike in purchasing. It seems like consumers are stockpiling. And, you know, in some of these states, like Washington and Colorado, I think that the supply will keep up with even a spike in demand. But in other states, especially some of the newer medical marijuana markets, their supply is very constrained. You have a lot of producers that haven't built out their facilities all the way. Wholesale prices are really high right now. And the more that people are stockpiling, the more that people are kind of purchasing, beyond normal kind of consumer behavior, the more that strains that supply. So, we'll see, I guess. But, hopefully some of these newer medical marijuana markets, some of the producers in those markets are going to continue to build out their cultivation facilities and can, you know, kind of help meet that demand at some point.
And we've talked a little bit about access to capital and how capital is required in such an intense manner on the marijuana side of the industry, not to make light of the fact that it's not needed on the hemp side of the industry, but when you're cultivating primarily indoors to a certain grade, focusing on flower production almost exclusively, it requires a lot more capital, and those capital markets have been interrupted as well. But Kristen, in terms of the supply chain, and we can sort of come back to that topic, but in the supply chain, I just wanted to touch on this one notion that, you know, China's led the world in hemp production for a number of years, and here we are with, as our president would say, the so-called Chinese virus, which is, you know, not a good way to characterize it, of course. I think we would all agree on that. But at the end of the day, it is a notion that will interrupt anything that comes out of China globally in a supply chain for quite some time. And those effects will be felt. Doesn't that create an opportunity for North America and American farmers in the hemp side of the industry to seize the level of production, which was almost non-cannabinoid focused entirely. Don't you think the U.S. can capitalize on that right now?
Absolutely. Just a couple weeks ago, Georgia Pacific, which is a large, they make a lot of toilet paper and paper towels, so you can imagine they're doing great right now. They just spent a whole bunch of money with a Canadian hemp fiber producer for some non-woven products. I think it's not China. I think, of course, we have a lot of production from China, but I think what this pandemic has shown everybody is, of course, it's just relying on any one place. You cannot rely entirely on one country or one part of the world for a supply chain, whether it's the inputs you need, whether it's your packaging, the machines where you build your stuff, produce your things. You need a diverse supply chain, and of course, closer to home is better. I do think there could be a reawakening. Certainly a lot of hemp producers are hoping, Bart referenced all the vape hardware. A lot of folks are hoping this makes people take a second look at more expensive bioplastic options and packaging options that could be produced closer to home. I think, though, the economic pressures happening right at the same time, I don't know how interested people will be in whether it's to be seen. I think whether people rush right back to the cheapest option, wherever that is, as soon as this crisis passes, or whether this does make people really want to invest in some new supply chains and new, maybe more expensive, but more sustainable methods of production.
Such a great point. And, you know, this was poised to be such a big year for hemp production in the United States, especially when you think about the USDA releasing the interim final rule last year. This was going to set the stage kind of for the next, really the next couple of years and the finalization of those rules for domestic hemp production. What do you think farmers are thinking right now who were looking to source seed or source their inputs with all this uncertainty right now? What do you think they're feeling?
I'm glad you brought that up because there's no two ways about it. It's a highly regulated industry. I think the secretary of the USDA is a great example of kind of what's going on here. Too. Last week, he was in Congress talking to some senators about agriculture, talked about they were going to look at the hemp rules. It was a priority. They were going to get right on it. Well, that seems like forever ago, right? Now the USDA is trying to keep food in the grocery stores and trying to make sure the food stamp program doesn't go bust and kids in schools have something to eat when the schools are closed. So I think this whole industry is going to see like a really hemp and marijuana go on the real back burner. We were talking just today, so many countries that are looking at expanding marijuana opportunities or hemp opportunities. Mexico has plans to legalize in April. A lot of those things I think are going to really go on ice. And you're going to see it's a highly regulated industry, and you're going to see farmers say, you know what, this is maybe too speculative, and we're not going to get these certainty for a long time. I know what's safe. I'm going to return maybe to some commodities I know better.
Understood. And as we look at, you mentioned something a moment ago about packaging, and I think that that's where, you know, Bart, I'd love your take on this. And you talk about the capital intensive nature of the marijuana side of the industry and the complexities there and the decisions that need to be made. But as we talk about Mexico, we talk about the financial elements, we talk about the packaging component, and then how that relates to China. All of those things are tied together in the sense that, you know, we were on the ground in Mexico about a week and a half ago working with the Mexican Senate, quite literally helping them finalize their language. And we talked with our attorneys down there, and that will be a separate podcast, about how we perceive that this coronavirus will impact the progressive nature of the Mexican cannabis legislation, which does provide for domestic distribution. So it's not in lockstep with what we're seeing across Latin America, which is a great amount of progress, even though it might be interrupted. But what they're talking about in Mexico is, even before those laws are finalized, presumably, originally by the end of April, April 30th is what was required, but the government had sent down a notice just yesterday that allowed them more time, probably into late May, to finalize that legislation, assuming everything comes out of this coronavirus pandemic and things begin to resemble normality, whatever that might be in the future. But Bart, look at packaging. Mexico is now being looked at to replace China and India as well for cannabis packaging. And cannabis packaging, because of regulations, is for lack of a better way to put it, over the top. And it requires an inordinate amount of input and frankly, unfriendly to the environment methods of packaging. But if we look at how that can drive Mexico into the cannabis industry, what are your thoughts on that? Does the Mexican participation, coupled with the fact that they might get in it sooner than they thought on the packaging angle, does that present a tremendous upside for the global supply chain or the supply chain generally on the marijuana side of the industry?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, and that's, you know, I hadn't personally tied those two together, but yeah, we've reported on how cannabis companies are looking at India, Mexico, even domestically here in the U.S. For options for packaging. But yeah, if you know, the packaging company in Mexico decides that they're going to start diversifying into other parts of the cannabis supply chain, then that could spread, you know, throughout the country and also encourage more, you know, industry to be connected to the marijuana industry. That's a great point. I also wanted to add to kind of this, you know, comment that Kristen was making about how certain things are going to be put on ice here. You know, we're hoping that there's going to be a lot of legislation, you know, passed here in the fall that's going to either move medical marijuana programs into adult use programs, or some states without medical programs, you know, they could also potentially, you know, expand their programs or, you know, have some kind of medical law for the first time. But, you know, somebody made the point to me the other day that even signature gathering efforts are going to be very difficult right now because no one's out and about. And, you know, this just ripples out in so many different ways that it's really, you know, kind of hard to even predict what the long-term impacts are going to be.
No, it's very well said. And you know, I think one of the things that we're going to learn, because things may not have been completely rosy just 2 to 6 weeks ago, but I think most companies, most businesses, most elements of both sides of our industry, they were on a path and they felt very good about what that path was and that they were going to stick that course and accomplish their individual objectives. I think that this virus, if nothing else, will make us realize that, particularly if it leads to a significant economic downturn, that we need to collaborate, that we need to work together. We can't just stay the course and do things ourselves. That accounts for professional service providers such as our law firm. That provides a backdrop for how our clients need to behave. Even if you had a strong company pointed in the right direction with economic uncertainty and given what's happening around us, we need to collaborate. And why is it that this industry seems to be the least friendly to collaboration, despite the fact that all came from sort of a common goal or purpose? Do you sense that, or is that just my perspective?
I mean, it's certainly very competitive, and you know, there's still a lot to be kind of determined on in terms of you know, which businesses are going to survive and which businesses are not. So I do think that, you know, your sense of that is probably correct. But maybe Kristen has something she wants to add to that.
No, I just think it's really going to, we're going to see how it plays out. But I think anybody making predictions now, it's just going to be too hard to say because it could change in a week.
Certainly could. It's changing every day is what it seems like. But it's such a pleasure to get you both on here and to kind of share these perspectives on the supply chain and how this is all going to shake out. Any parting thoughts from you, Kristen, or you, Bart?
Last thing I wanted to say is another one element that both sides of our industry have in common, which is unusual for ag, is high labor costs. Compared to other crops, flower products are really labor intensive, hand harvested, grown inside. So I think we're going to see a real change in people taking a new look at AI or different methods of production that take fewer people and not fewer people close together, maybe as we go forward, being something worth investing in.
Yeah, and for me, the one kind of takeaway that we've seen that's positive out of this kind of horrible situation that we're in right now is that, you know, these medical companies being, these dispensaries being deemed, you know, as essential businesses, mm-hmm. I think goes a long way to kind of validate the industry and to, you know, combat some of the stigma there. I mean, when people are starting to treat dispensaries the same way that we treat pharmacies, I think we're, making some good progress there.
Very well said, guys. Thank you very much for joining us today to talk about these things. And we will definitely stay in touch and stay tuned to the content that you all put out. And thank you for covering things so promptly and so accurately. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.
Take care, guys. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minutes special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to Hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.